or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov. What if you didn't follow the path everyone else takes? Would you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
Yeah, so good we tell you twice. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. Time, once again, for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Of course, always.
And, I guess I might as well proceed with what I was going to say anyway. Kyle, you know the president's going to be resigning.
No, I thought he was he was wrestling in a sumo match or something.
Well, you're mistaken.
He's certainly fat enough.
He's been here the whole time. I had this all planned out. I was gonna tell you that the president's resigning, and you were gonna go all happy, and then I was gonna dash your hopes by saying it's not that one. It's the one, the Stony Brook president. But then Bob Longman came in here and told us that this was happening, and then you heard about it, so I can't surprise you anymore.
Oh my gosh, what a surprise.
We're too informed around here. Can we just be uninformed for a little bit? Is that too much to ask?
Yeah.
So, our own president, Stan Lee, is leaving us.
Stan Lee? I thought he died.
Okay. No, it's not Stan Lee. Boy, you're going to be a real wise guy for the whole hour, aren't you?
All day.
Dr. Samuel L. Stan Lee, Jr. He's leaving after nearly a decade.
Why do I care?
Well, because...
okay, what'd he do?
That's a good question. Why?
What at Stony Brook was affected?
I'm not sure.
Did he help the station?
Yeah, he did. He was. I mean, he didn't.
Is that why we? Okay,
attack
he did.
Us. He didn't do anything bad.
He facilitated the move to the new studios.
I guess you could say that.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm actually looking at the manager. Yeah, she's waving her. She's pointing her finger at me. Now she's running it across her throat.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And you deserve that.
All right.
No, he's been here nearly a decade, so that's a long time. I've seen a lot of presidents come and go. I have. I don't know why that resonates, but I'm trying to remember who they all are. John Toll was the president when I first came here. And then I think, I want to say T.A. Pond. I think he was the interim president. And we had Marburger, but there was somebody else. I can't remember who they are. And Shirley Strum Kenny, she was a president for a while. Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And
Whoa.
What?
She was the president of Stony Brook.
Am I misremembering that? Why do I think that she was? I have to go to Wikipedia to figure all this out. But, okay, but you only have an hour.
I believe she was until there's evidence that she wasn't.
I mean, wouldn't it benefit from her being in charge? I think it would.
I don't think that's a bad thing, and probably just a feather in her, I don't know, cap?
Do they wear caps? Whatever they wear in the Supreme Court.
Bonnet.
He's going to, for some reason, he's leaving us for Michigan. You know where Detroit is?
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to the very place that had the Dr. Larry Nassar, that evil person who was molesting people.
Wait, he's going to be a gymnastics coach?
No, he's not going to be that. He's going to be the president, but he's going to, I guess, bring it back from the gates of hell. Why? Why would you leave us to go there? I don't understand. I mean, I'm looking over this story now. And
the money's probably good.
Well, no, he makes $449,000 here.
You mean he only makes $449,000?
He makes $449,000.
That's nothing.
I just try to be making $800,000 a year.
Understand?
All right, no, I get it now. It's a bigger number.
The maintenance on a fleet of Maseratis, it's just, I mean, that alone is like more than half of that, so...
Okay, all right. And he's also going to be eligible for an annual performance bonus of up to 20%, which is $160,000. And then the school will contribute an additional $100,000 a year to deferred compensation. What does that even mean?
Deferred.
When you make that much money, why does everybody else pitch in to give you even more money? I don't understand that.
I don't get deferred compensation.
Well, anyway, this morning in a note that we all got, Stanley said he was extraordinarily grateful to the chancellor, SUNY Board of Trustees, the Stony Brook Foundation, Stony Brook Council, and especially 107.3 FM. For some reason, he left out 90.1 FM and only thanked our translator station.
W297BM.
Very good, Kyle. Very good.
It's written on a piece of paper to your left.
Okay. Together, we have accomplished amazing things, and I am particularly proud of the work all of us have done in improving student success, eliminating differences between our student populations in graduation rates, growing sponsored research expenditures to new highs, exceeding goals in fundraising, significantly improving our healthcare enterprise, never knowing how to end a sentence that has lots of commas in it, strengthening our relationship with Brookhaven National Laboratory, hitting all-time highs in our national rankings, using the word highs three times in one sentence, and committing our university to an international leadership role in social mobility, diversity, inclusiveness, and equity.
So he solved...
Wow!
Solved Stony Brook.
I guess so. And now someone has to break it again, and then someone else will come in and fix things.
Slow clap.
I'm not doing the slow clap. I'm not doing that.
Sorry.
But
go on, I'm listening.
He served as president since 2009. He has nearly 15 years of higher education leadership experience.
Uh-huh.
There's all kinds of other history that we can go into here, but we really don't need to. Who's going to lead us now? Who's going to be our president? I think it should be one of us. I think it should be somebody from the radio station.
To your leader,
and
Bob Longman.
I'm going to nominate Bob Longman just as revenge for ruining the surprise.
President,
before.
I'm glad we see eye to eye on that.
Uh-huh.
I second that.
And maybe Matt Mankiewicz. He'd be a good president.
Vice Chancellor Mankiewicz.
Yeah, yeah. No, that would be something.
I like that.
And maybe Frank, our chief engineer, but with the condition that he remain chief engineer, but also be president of the university. I think he'll get things done that way.
Yeah.
More things done that way.
And Matt will ban parking tickets.
I don't know about parking tickets. I think there's going to be a lot more of those. But yeah, historic day here at Stony Brook. So,
hooray.
I don't know. We could get a Trump. We could get another Trump. You know,
so
who knows what we're going to get?
Commencement was last week.
It was Friday.
The students are gone.
All gone.
No more.
They've dispersed. We don't know where they are, but they're out in the real world somewhere.
Well, I won't comment on where they went, but...
There's a whole lot of geese replacing them.
We all know. And...
You saw goslings, right?
I did. They're like adolescent goslings.
Uh-huh. They'll be enrolling soon.
They're getting actual feathers soon. They just have their down.
Yeah.
I don't know. I saw like at least half a comforter out there.
Wow. That's how you think of geese.
Yeah,
no,
maybe like
Kyle is not like that. Kyle is not somebody who doesn't care about animals. We've been following the eagles of Big Bear City.
Don't bring that up.
It's,
that's just
it's sad news. Actually, I say Big Bear City. That's where
Valley. The
Tripod family were from in our old show back in the 80s. But I don't think it's called Big Bear City. I think it's just called Big Bear. And this is Big Bear Mountain in California. And we've been following on YouTube the eagles and Big Bear. And basically... you see this nest that mostly has a mother sitting in it over two hatchlings, eaglets they call them. But occasionally the father comes by and he brings fish and sticks and things like that. And if she's ever in trouble, say like some crow is getting too close or there's just something that needs to be dealt with, she lets out a call and he shows up pretty quickly. So they're both watching over the kids. But some tragedy this last weekend, there was a snowstorm. Yes, they have snowstorms in late May in that part of California. It's up on a mountain. And one of the eaglets did not make it. So you might have heard about this. It's actually making the news out in California because everybody's following this. The nest was built by a bunch of third graders. I never would have guessed. It looks like, you know, something that an eagle would construct.
They collected the sticks.
They did, and they named the birds as well. The one who passed away was named Cookie.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very sad. It's actually a very sad thing because you're watching these little creatures growing up, learning things, and it's just it's a part of nature. It's something that we forget. It's harsh, and we were watching that night when the mother was just trying to cover her children with her wings to keep them dry, but they were getting a little too big, so she couldn't completely cover them anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we'd seen a couple of these rough nights. I don't know why it's still snowing out there. I mean, I thought California is like 72 degrees year-round.
Not there, it isn't.
It's like as easy does it as Florida, but anyway, the fact is they're up at some elevation, and of course on top of that they're 150 feet up in a tree, so at nighttime when the sun goes down, a lot of that precipitation is immediately a little bit of a snowstorm. But this particular night, we'd seen a couple, as I said, but this particular night it was wet, and then it turned to snow, and as you said, they're just a little too big for the parent bird to stand there and cover both of them entirely throughout the night. And I mean, she did
Did her best.
But it's and it was really rough because I was just checking up on their page to look at the updates and stuff. This was like a day or two after they had been banded, which they had to do. They had a professional climber, licensed climber, go up and band them around their ankles. And you have to do that before they start flying, obviously, because it's a little bit harder to catch them and do this. So I had watched that, and I just wanted to like follow up. And I was looking at one update that basically was like, yeah, they're fine this morning. And then I scrolled up, and there was like this announcement same day.
Right.
That, you know, they had been fine in the morning, but this one bird was, I guess, a little bit listless and didn't really bounce back throughout the day. And that was, it was really sad.
The mortality rate is 50% for young eagles. So that's something to remember. And I guess that's exactly where they are right now because one kid has survived. And
in the first year.
In the first year, right. Yep. And they're only about a month old.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot to go. A lot to go still. And, you know, there's actually sightings of bald eagles around here now, which is amazing. There are actually some good things. We're going to try to focus on, well, we're not off to a good start, but I want to focus on good things because there are good things happening. And I think some of the wildlife that we're seeing is a good thing, seeing birds that have not been around here for a while. And just, you know, I get that there's movement, perhaps as a reaction to the things that have been going on over the past few years. It's a movement to preserve, to conserve, to think green, and you know, some intelligent policies.
I'm with you as far as focusing on good things, but I don't want to slip into escapism because I think there's far too much of that going on. People are turning to, you know, fiction, they're mm-hmm. watching, you know, streaming channels, they're doing all this kind of escapism, and right before our eyes or under our noses, a lot of really terrible stuff's going on. But I don't want to harp on that, but as I said, I don't want to slip into like abject escapism because it's cozy, because it makes me, you know, feel good, or because we don't want our listeners to be down or something. I'm not saying get down, but get involved and pay attention and talk, tell people, write representatives, whatever you got to do. But I just want to put that out there, the caveat that, like, this is not about putting your head in the sand, but there is good stuff going on.
Yeah.
And speaking of green stuff, next week, follow the hashtag All Eyes on Juliana. And what that is the Juliana v. United States. Basically, a dozen students, like kids, young people, minors, I don't know what you want to say. They're basically suing the government because of their future, because their future is in jeopardy because of carbon emissions and the impact that that's having on those young people's habitat. Basically, they come from all over this country, and each of them has a really interesting story on how the changes in our atmosphere in the past decade and in the past century are changing the way they're experiencing the world currently, but also how those impacts will change their world in the future. And this has never been done before. It's a really fascinating take. And a new strategy, I think, in holding the government and by association, the corporations that have influenced and lobbied the government to you know, bend it to their will and allow all of you know, the benzene in our water you know, all the misinformation about what's being belched out of tailpipes and so on and so forth. They're basically trying this strategy because in the future, a lot of the data, a lot of the stuff that has been crunched by supercomputers is telling us that, hey, this stuff's not good and it's not going to get better. All these 1,500-year storms are like six-month storms. The fire season's annual. All this stuff, you know, it's year-round. There's no break in the fire season anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody in Seattle, my hometown, is, you know, getting ready to inhale a lot of smoke. So anyway, this case is taking place in the 9th District Court, and that's in Oregon. These plaintiffs are going to be bringing this up and making their case. And I think it's really exciting. They need your support, pictures and comments. There's going to be a live stream.
It's going to be streamed.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure if it's going to be in the court. I think it will be because do you remember a little while ago, the Ninth on the immigration side, they streamed a lot of the court stuff in the Ninth District. I think that was a Seattle courtroom. But suffice to say, yeah, there's going to be a lot of social media activity, and you will be able to watch or hear, if not live. I'm thinking live. I got a link to it, and we'll be tuning in as live as possible. And if it isn't, it'll be well immediately after anything that has transpired, whether it's a transcript or a video from it. But anyway, the hashtag is All Eyes on Juliana.
And Juliana is with a J, I guess?
Yeah, that's one of the defendants.
Okay.
Or the plaintiffs.
And it's weird that – how old are these kids?
It's a really wide range. Some are probably nearing adulthood and in their 20s, but most of them I think are minors. The youngest maybe around 10 or – you know, when they started this, they were a little younger, but this has been ongoing and building up to this for the past, like, I think 5 years or somewhere around there.
Wow. I just wonder how a kid of 10 gets so involved that they're actually winding up suing the government in federal court. It's awesome, and it says something, I think, positive about the system. You know, you have to look at the positive aspects of it. And hopefully it results in something. What can they get? What can they get from this? Can they actually change policy or do something significant?
Well, I think it's about culpability mm-hmm. and really connecting the dots. That this segmenting and this idea that, well, cancer is weird because, you know, people just get cancer. It's not connected to this. It's not connected to that. This really brings it around. And it's talking about the future. It's talking about what has led up to this, and what basically they want is their stories on the record. And I think there are claims. I'm not exactly sure that I don't think there's a windfall, in other words, that these young people are really trying to go after. But I think whatever the ruling is, I think what will happen is there will be some kind of fund. There will be some kind of I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure what they're asking. You can find out more at Our Children's Trust. Just search for that, or it's okay. ourchildrenstrust.org. I'm not exactly sure, but you can find out more about it. But basically, they want to be heard, and they are making a case that the government has willfully allowed has been aware of human activity impacting the climate. And this has been known and talked about insofar as the Navy and the military making plans for this kind of thing, so on and so forth. There's ample evidence that the government knows about this, and yet they're continuing to reduce a lot of the protections. They're diluting the power of the EPA and so on and so forth. So these young people want to get on the record and make a case such that a fund or action can be taken based on this precedent.
I'm looking at their website now. It's ourchildrenstrust.org, and it's great. You see all these kids standing up, and it says at the top, Juliana versus United States hearing on June 4th, show the government that you're watching. And I think that's awesome. So you can live stream this and just learn more about it, spread the word. It just shows that when you get involved, it can make a difference. And imagine if we all got involved to this kind of a degree, we could really see some changes.
Yeah. And I mentioned benzene earlier. I mean, there's a barge that got run into, and it was a gasoline additive that spilled all over in Houston. And, you know, that's a carcinogen, and it's in gasoline. And if a car doesn't completely burn that, it goes into the air. So, you know, We're, you know, talking about, oh, well, you know, we need fossil fuels as a transition. That's a talking point. Mm-hmm. We need to change our ways. And I think it's really inspiring that these young people are brave enough to step out and say, yeah, this does matter. We can do something different. And a lot of the technology, all of it's there. Like what is possible scientifically, it's all there. It's this attitude that we cannot pause the market economy. We can't pause capitalism. We can't
do anything else but continue what we've been doing. And they beg to differ.
The people who say that are the people that have a vested interest in the way things are now. When you say, you know, we can change, we can adopt these new technologies, that's opportunity. That's opportunity for economic growth. That's opportunity for new jobs, all kinds of things. But the people who want to hold that back, they're the people that are tied to the old way, the people that want to keep us mired in fossil fuels. And that's not growth. That's staying behind. So we have to look at that in perspective and change the narrative a little bit. People who want green technology, who want solar power and wind power and things like that, those are the real job generators. And it needs to be looked at in that particular way. You can't give up the narrative and say that coal for some reason generates jobs. No, coal keeps people from getting better jobs and keeps more jobs from being generated, and it pollutes the atmosphere at the same time.
Yeah, I'll just finish just by adding to that. I mean, I personally thought this was something I would get involved with. I was very interested in green technology, and I thought this would be something like I would do for the rest of my life. You know, this was a sort, like, being involved in new technologies would be a way I could make a living, and I was really passionate about it. But what I found in practical experience is that there is a lot preventing that, and for me, I think that, well, for these young people, that those opportunities may yet be possible, and I'm really inspired by it, and I I've found that, you know, other opportunities were kind of all there was. Of course, the financial downturn and all of that stuff impacted it. But there's a lot that bringing this stuff to market prevents. You know, that we are biased for the entrenched ways of doing these things, I feel like, you know, if maybe those jobs and opportunities didn't, you know, hit with generations before me or my generation, perhaps these young people will be able to find their way and be employed in those kinds of industries and stuff. But really, it is greed. You know, the entrenched interests,
of course,
want to continue to profit, and it's easier. And let me also just add, a lot of those jobs, you know, making solar panels, it's not you know, magical, you know, hippies, you know, and rainbows, and it's all beautiful. Like, I worked in the industry and, you know, tried my best to advocate and be involved. But what I realized is that, you know, it's the least worst. It's the least evil. You know, a lithium ion battery plant is not someplace that you would want to, like, eat off the floor. So, yeah, these technologies themselves, you know, may involve, you know, traditional production techniques. They aren't, you know, totally clean. That's not the point. The point is creating infrastructure and stimulating the processes that the end product is not as dirty and so on and so forth.
Right, like, it might nobody's be totally saying, clean, but they're certainly a lot cleaner than what we're using now.
Right. Nobody's saying that a solar panel factory doesn't use chemicals. Nobody's saying that, you know, clean fuels or other types of industries are the panacea, but they are the least worst option. They're the least evil option. And they're providing new revenue and new jobs for people that aren't entrenched.
I think that's what you have to focus on is the job aspect of it, because when you're building new technology, that generates jobs, it generates enthusiasm. And to just tell people that they can only be this type of a person, they can only have this kind of a career, that is so limiting. And it's a perfect parallel to what we are doing as far as the environment. We need to break free of that. And obviously what we're seeing now with the ruling party is a push to keep things the way they are. I mean, it's a bad enough idea just alone for that. But when you add in what it's doing to the environment, it's unconscionable. There is no excuse to be doing this other than greed. And greed certainly is not a reason to sacrifice the planet.
And those companies and the government itself have shown their hand. They're not willing, and they're not contributing to those things. They're not bringing about those new technologies. They're not doing it fast enough. And the question, I think, and this is my opinion, the question is,
you know, do we want to reward those entrenched interests? Because they certainly haven't been making the change very fast. The most they've done is greenwash and done a lot of advertising. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the car companies. Same thing, you know, across the board. They're diversifying and they're talking a good game, but most of it is greenwashing and most of it is this sort of slow walk transitional thing where we're going to help you get there and all of that kind of thing. Do we want to reward people that are slow walking us to a future where they then profit? Right. Or are we going to give opportunities to new companies, new ideas, and new workers that want to be involved?
Well, that's up to us, I think. We're the ones making that decision. Those kids are the ones making that decision just by raising their voices, standing up, and knowing the facts, knowing things about how it all works, what the possibilities are. And I think we're seeing more acceptance of that. Now, you're talking about how the people in charge are trying to control the dialogue and limit things. Just in the last couple of days, I believe the Trump administration did a real doozy as far as how they're going to allow reporting of the future prospects on the environment. Do you have the details on that?
Oh, well, I can give you kind of the bird's eye take. Basically, the there's a climate report that is put out every couple of years. Mm-hmm. There was one that came out recently, you might recall, just after Thanksgiving. That's when the administration decided, yeah, this is a perfect time to bury this. And they don't like that the report itself projects further into the future. And the argument from the scientific perspective is that you need to talk about what will happen if we continue with business as usual. Okay. So if we don't do anything, what happens? And the fact is that most of the change, most of the real difficult, like sea level rise and big problems, will occur after 2050. And what the administration is trying to do is limit the projections to 2040.
Oh, that's clever. So they know.
And most of what the change will be is incremental degree changes, maybe some more of these tornadoes and storms and stuff. But we won't see like multi-foot sea rise until after 2050. So they're putting the stop at 2040 for any of these reports going forward. And by the way, the appointee who's going to be sanitizing the next report, which is in 2021, he's an appointee of Bolton, and both Bolton and him are bankrolled by the Mercer family. So
now the Mercer family is only a few miles away from here. They're in Head of the Harbor, right by the Stony Brook Mill Pond. And that's, you know, they basically, they're part of Renaissance Technologies, which is in Setauket. It's all right here. It freaks me out to realize this. But these people, they are so evil. They put these other evil people in charge by bankrolling them. People like John Bolton, who is evil personified. And basically, almost every problem you can imagine that we are now facing, you can link back to that kind of mentality. And just what you're describing here, where they are trying to limit how far into the future we're talking about how screwed up the environment is going to get, that is the ultimate in control. Yeah, you know, if we keep using fossil fuels, well, how's the world going to change in the next 5 minutes? Oh, it's not going to be a catastrophe? Well, I guess it's okay then. We can't talk about it in 20 years, 30 years, 40 years when things really hit the fan. And that is incredible that they are actually trying to get away with that and that they actually might get away with that. So we need to challenge them on every possible level and acknowledge when people are doing evil things, just like we are acknowledging here.
Yeah, instead of really pushing the science and doing more science on this, it creates an atmosphere of permissiveness. And, right. And that is deadly. It will be deadly for your children. It'll be deadly for a lot of people, maybe not you personally, but you know, the air you breathe, the water you're ingesting,
it will affect you.
It one way or another, it will come and bite you. So I think this is something everyone should be concerned about, and I would really question your leadership. Wherever side you are on the political spectrum, you need to understand that there is a very strong greedy force, that's my opinion, but against the science here, and it's wrong.
Yeah, and I think this is something that people, no matter what your political background, can realize, can agree upon. We might not agree on who is best leading and various other things, but I think the environment, that's something a lot of us can get together on and realize this is a good direction, this is a bad direction. That might be all we can agree upon, but that's a good starting point. Now, we mentioned the evil people that are affiliated with the Renaissance. It's kind of interesting, too, because this past week we went over to a place called Avalon Park, also in Head of the Harbor, right near where the Mercers are. And that is donated land. I think it's something like 80 acres. Donated by the good half of Renaissance, this guy named Simons. I think he's the one who started it. Yeah, there's actually a good force that's affiliated with Renaissance. And it's kind of amazing that he donated all this land right next to the where the Mercers are. You could literally throw a stone from the park and hit their house. Not that I'm saying do that, but you could. And it was donated in memory of his son, who was tragically killed in a bike accident. So it's the story is a lot more complex, and there are a lot more interesting characters and a lot going on, a lot of stories to tell, and it all seems to be centered on here for some reason. But I'm sure there are links everywhere in this country. I'm sure you can find things that are relevant.
I'm not as taken. I mean, I grew up with billionaires in the backyard, a la, you know, Bill Gates. He's an okay part of this. I'm not necessarily, enamored.
He bankrolls non-Trump people. So as far as I'm concerned, that's great. That's what we need more of. So, yeah, if we had 10 more people like that, we might actually have a chance of outspending them.
Billionaires will not save you.
No, but they can help. It's all, this country is all about money, you know, and I don't know. It sounds cynical, but
what else good is going on?
They're thinking of electrifying the Port Jefferson railroad.
That's incredible.
The LIRR.
Finally.
I was reading about this. And first of all, you know, we have some amazing politicians out here. Steve Englebright is one of them with the state. Used to be a county legislator. And he supports electrifying the Port Jefferson train line. Along with many, many other things, tearing down buildings, replacing them with parks, and just basically doing things that are better for the environment, a long track record of supporting that kind of a thing. But when you realize that something that involves improved technology is something that environmentalists also support, I think that's a good path to be on. And by having the line finally be electrified out here, you don't have those diesel engines spewing diesel fumes into the air around us.
Or idling all night long.
All night long. Yeah, so that is a good thing. I had no idea it was even being considered, but apparently with new people in charge, there's a new guy in charge of the LIRR and Governor Cuomo and all that, there's a lot of pushing to get things done with the MTA, with mass transit. And for the first time, it looks like they might be able to actually allocate funds for this job that was always considered to be impossible.
Brilliant.
And I like when things that are impossible happen, such as the Kosciuszko Bridge. Hey, they built a new Kosciuszko Bridge. They're bringing LIRR to Grand Central Station.
It's almost done.
They're building a third track from Mineola to Hicksville. They built a second track on the Ronkonkoma line. There's all kinds of things they can do. They just
Second
have
Avenue.
To say... The Second Avenue. Oh, the Second Avenue subway. Yes.
Yeah, come on.
All sorts of things.
List keeps going.
You just got to keep at it. And, and also the congestion charging in New York City. I drive into New York City, but I'm looking forward to that because I think that's a great thing. In fact, that's where a lot of the money is coming from.
The Amtrak improvements at Penn Station.
Yeah, there's that,
too.
Did you
mention that?
I would like to see more Amtrak improvements nationwide. I'd like to see high-speed rail, but you know I'll just be talking for hours about that.
It's going to be new rolling stock. It's going to be cool.
Point is, you can actually do these things if you have the political will, and I'm seeing more political will. I'm seeing people actually talking about building a second track from Port Jefferson to Huntington. Imagine that. That means so many more trains will be able to go back and forth, and it'll be so much faster, too, because you won't have to switch at Huntington. This is actually happening. So I was very enthused by that.
People will pay for it, too. I mean, if it works, if it's as substantial as you're speaking about, mm-hmm. I mean, the ridership would be better if it did not have the reputation it has, right?
Yeah, it's got a pretty bad reputation, but
that's
traditional. Exactly. You know, the LIRR is almost 200 years old. I mean, think about that. That's before airplanes. That's before cars. That's before DSL.
All right. That's before no salty remarks.
It's just really old, almost 200 years. That's how long our train system has been around. And if you check, if you can get your hands on a train schedule from 100 years ago, 150 years ago, you'll find it's not much faster now. In fact, it might even be slower. So that's nothing to be proud of.
200 years old and getting better every day.
Yeah, I don't know what you're
saying. All right, just move on. Good stuff. What else you got?
We had the European elections, European Union elections, which I thought was not bad. I mean, you had some populist results. It was really bizarre. 28 countries having elections basically on the same day.
Kind of hard to follow.
Very hard to follow. It's kind of like, you know, the FA Cup or Champions League or something like that. You sort of get how they have the mentality for all this. Yeah, everybody is voting for who they're going to send to Brussels to represent their country. And in some countries, you had the populist parties, anti-immigrant parties prevailing. Others, you had liberals, you had Green Party. Germany, the Green Party doubled their strength, and they're now a dominant force. Not a prevailing force, but, you know, they're significant. So I think it's good. I think it's even good that the populist won in various places because now they're playing the game at least. They're involved in the conversation instead of being outside the discussion and just wanting to break the whole thing up. Now they're there, and they're going to have to argue. They're going to have to make their points. They're going to have to win the arguments. And, you know, as long as you're doing that, at least there's a chance of democracy prevailing. So, okay, let's see what happens. England, more representatives were elected in what's known as the Brexit Party.
Yep.
Which is kind of interesting because you have a party now that is being represented in Brussels that wants to not be represented in Brussels. So I don't know how that's going to go. It's also interesting, too, because you might look at this and say, wow, more people voted for Brexit than anything else in the UK. Well, technically that's true, but if you add up all the other parties that were also running, all of which you can say, except for the Conservatives, or I don't think won much at all, all of which basically are anti-Brexit, there's more of them than the Brexit people. So if it ever comes to a second referendum, I think that Brexit will fail. And I think that's a good thing because, you know, when you have all this nationalism and separatism, that's when you have conflicts. That's when you have really bad policies. And EU might have overstepped in some places, and I can see why people might be a bit perturbed. Overall, I think it's a really, really good thing. You're not stopping trains at every border. You're not changing money at every country you go into. And you basically can avoid the kinds of conflicts that have happened over the centuries, which hopefully having a union and seeing this show of democracy on Sunday, that's what this kind of thing allows.
Yeah, and using that democratic process to continue to reevaluate what actually people want and what now will happen is they'll be held to account. I mean, what kind of job they do is going to be carefully watched as they have representation and going forward in the EU. They have to make a case, and it can't just be these sort of hyperbolic and polarizing takes. It's got to be a comprehensive and professional representation, and so it'd be very interesting to watch going forward. And they'll be judged based on the work they do.
I don't know what's going to happen in England, though. It's really going to get crazy in the months ahead. Theresa May is out; she quit a few days ago, very tearfully. And you know, I kind of feel sorry for her because you know, I disagree with almost everything she says, but she is really strong and really stands up for what she believes in and kind of got a rough deal here because she was put in a position of having to deliver on Brexit. But the thing is, what they failed to realize is that asking people if they're sure about this now that they're more informed, that's not ignoring people. That's listening to people. And I think the people who are against having a second referendum, they're the ones that are afraid they'll lose, their position will lose. That's the only reason they're really against it. If you ask a second time, or if you ask with more information, is this what you want to do? I really think that's keeping people in the process. You know, you ask them once, and it's a close vote, and a lot of people don't even know what Brexit is, and a lot of people didn't show up. And it happens, and the whole country is in a state of panic now. Well, okay, it's different. It's different than it was in 2016 now. So now with all that information, what do you think? Should we keep going? And if they say, yeah, keep going, I think that's a mandate. That's definitely a mandate. But if they say, you know what, this is a bad idea, let's make it work out with the EU, aren't you in a much better place? You know, Theresa May kept bringing forth this proposal over and over and over again to Parliament, and it got rejected. It got rejected three times. How is it that she can keep bringing forth the same thing, expecting people to change their minds, and that's not ignoring the will of the people? They've already voted on it, but you're giving them the same thing over and over again. And it's weird because a week or so ago, she phrased it in a different way. She said, okay, I'm going to offer it to you to vote again, and if you accept it, then I will support a second referendum. So basically she's saying, if you agree on leaving the EU, then you can vote on not leaving the EU. It was bizarre, twisted logic, and I think that's the time you got to go. I think that's the time when it's obviously too much.
The psychosis has set in.
It's resembling a Monty Python skit now. So okay, time to go. Let's get somebody else. I'm just worried it's going to be Boris Johnson, and we're going to have two Trump lookalikes running powerful countries.
Him and Farage.
But you know, they want a hard Brexit, which is basically crashing out on October 31st, and all kinds of chaos. Parliament does not want that. They have been very clear. If they're pushing for this, if whoever takes over for Theresa May is pushing for this, they're not going to succeed. It's going to be a very hard sell and a failure, and they will probably lose the next election, and there'll be somebody else in charge, and it won't be a pro-Brexit party or person. So, interesting times over there. And, of course, you have the Europa League and Champions League final coming up this week. All England teams. So, that's never happened before.
Yeah, we've been following along a little bit. And, you're better versed in it than I am. I can't keep up. It's complicated. But
all the crazy statistics. And, yeah, you're right. It is complicated, just like these elections are complicated. But mm-hmm. It's kind of a challenge to try and figure it all out. Like, for instance, we had the finals of the Europa League, but both going to British teams. The finals of the Champions League, both going to British teams. That's on Saturday. And you had Manchester City, who won what's known as the treble, which is they won their league, finished in first place. They won the FA Cup, which is comprised of hundreds of teams. And they won the League Cup, which is comprised of not as many teams. That's never happened before in England. Never happened before where somebody has won all three in the same year. All right. And then, just to make it even more interesting, there's a second division below the first division. First division is known as the Premier League. And the second division is known as the Championship, which is kind of confusing. I prefer to think of it as first and second. But at the end of the season, the top three teams from the second division go up to the first division, and the bottom three teams of the first division go down to the second division for the next season. And, of course, there's a lot more money in the Premier League. There's a lot more prestige. So what they do is they have a playoff for the final position. The first two teams go in, and then there's a playoff for the third position. And they had that playoff game, which between Aston Villa and Derby County, and Aston Villa won. But it's a way of creating another championship out of nothing in the second division, which led to a lot of excitement. So, yeah, you know, you always make things fun and different and a challenge to follow. But it's worth the effort, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll report back on the results of that and more.
I didn't mean to talk so long, but we have a phone here. If anybody wants to call up and share their opinions, I know there's not too much time left, but we do have a few minutes. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. You can call from anywhere in the world.
You can always write us.
Yeah, but not on the phone. But, yeah, you can write to us.
The
absolutely.
The email address is otw@2600.com.
And do you know OTW stands for Off the Wall? That's the name of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you can write to us and speak your mind. Say whatever you wish to say.
Share some stories. Maybe you have some comments. Maybe you have some ideas for some topics. Maybe you, share other things with us. Maybe something we haven't ever talked about.
Have we not talked about something? I guess it's possible.
There might be something.
Might be a topic that we have not touched upon.
I'm just putting that out.
We just talked about the second division of British soccer, so I think, you know, that covers a lot.
Yeah.
But who knows? Again, 631-632-9872, if you have anything to say to us in the next 5 minutes or so, we'd love to hear from you. How about this? Netflix has become the first major Hollywood company to take a stand against Georgia's recent passage of a strict abortion law. They're basically saying, they said this today, the streaming giant would rethink our entire investment in Georgia if legislation known as the Heartbeat Bill became state law. Yeah, and a lot of things are filmed in Georgia.
A lot.
A lot. We see this on TV.
Atlanta.
Well, that would be so. Can you imagine if Atlanta was no longer filmed in Georgia? I mean, is that a Netflix thing? That's not a Netflix production, though.
I don't even know.
Yeah, it's on one of those things. But I think that would make a hell of a statement.
I'm just saying it has one of the Georgia tax incentive cards at the end when you're looking at the credits. Anything you watch, look at the credits, find out where things are shot. Find out. You know, you'd be surprised. A lot of these states, of course, here, New York has a huge film incentive program because people want to film here, and there's an incredible industry here for movies and television production. But Georgia is another one of those states. Mm-hmm. They do tax breaks. They do all kinds of things to get people to produce stuff there, to hire local workers. And that is a major flex. If Netflix says, you know what, all those people, all those gaffers, all those PAs and cinematographers or whomever, caterers, whatever is being taken advantage of by these productions, will be no more because of your stance on this.
Yeah, and you may say, you know, it's hurting the people that you want to help. Well, you know, that's not really how this kind of thing works. Here's their statement. We have many women working on productions in Georgia whose rights, along with millions of others, will be severely restricted by this law. It's why we will work with the ACLU and others to fight it in court. Given the legislation has not yet been implemented, we'll continue to film there while also supporting partners and artists who choose not to. Should it ever come into effect, we'd rethink our entire investment in Georgia. And, you know, people who are affected by this, they want the pressure to be put on them. Not on them. The pressure's already being put on them. They want the pressure to be put on the people running their state that are responsible for this kind of thing. They want them to feel the pain. It's, you know, remnants of South Africa, where you had to boycott to get change to take effect in the first place.
Well, and what it does is it disrupts that disconnect. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no longer a disconnect between the productions and the virtues of what's going on there and the political side and the impacts there. When representation is backed by organizations and entities like Netflix, which is no longer a mail order DVD service, you know, they're a bit more of a player when it comes to producing content. When they put their weight behind this kind of representation, it becomes less disconnected and it puts it to the fore, and that's important.
Mm-hmm. That's another way of reacting, of striking back, of saying we're not going to take this. You hurt them in whatever way you can. Economically is really the best way, because that is what they respond to. So when these things get passed, when people's rights are being trampled upon, You say something, you do something in whatever way you can, and don't fall for the propaganda. This is wrong. What's happening is completely wrong. Just, you know, if nothing else, just look at who voted for this bill. Look at who voted for this bill. I'm not talking about people who support it. I'm talking about people in their state legislature that did this. All male.
Yeah,
I think all white male, too, I believe. I know the governor's a female, but she signed it. Great. Okay. But all the people who put this forth. You know, I think if you're going to have this conversation, get all the men out of the room. All right? If you're going to talk about abortion in any way, have it be a woman's issue. Their bodies, their choice. And if they decide, you know, we want to impose this will on all women everywhere, I can't imagine that happening. But, you know, I wouldn't feel quite as strongly as I do just seeing their picture of all these middle-aged white guys deciding what a woman can do and cannot do.
Yeah, I would say when people's rights are what I would add to people's rights being infringed is also others' religious beliefs being imposed upon people who may not have those same beliefs. That's, I think, equally important. But to your point, absolutely, this really ought not to be decided by you know, very many men at all. I think women should lead and be heard on this issue and not judged by a panel of dudes.
Yeah, I mean, I have an objection to any male being a part of that decision, but to find out it's all males that brought this forth, wow, that's just, I mean, how do you support that? How can you possibly support that? No matter what position you take on the issue, it's so wrong. It just is so wrong. It's good to see people reacting in that particular way as well. It's good to see people speaking out and challenging. It matters. It's easy to believe that there's just too much to deal with and that it's never going to make a difference. That's what they want you to believe.
Yes, the fatigue.
But I'll tell you, who's fatigued? The people trying to do this, they're fatigued because they're constantly, constantly being hit with challenges. Why do you think there hasn't been a White House press conference in so long?
Yep.
They don't want to deal with it. Why do you think Trump is so defensive all the time? Because this really affects him. And that is our job, to make sure that we are heard, to make sure that bad things don't happen. And it's great that the kids are leading, you know, that they're the ones filing lawsuits. I know Angela Merkel even said that she was feeling pressure from middle school. I don't know what phrase she used, but children,
yeah,
were putting pressure on her to do more. For the environment. And Germany does a lot. They do a lot of green energy.
Yeah, they're basically cutting off all of their... They've stopped nuclear. Even though they do decommissioning, they have companies, I think Russian-backed companies, that decommission and do stuff like that. But they are not supplying their power system with fossil fuels and nuclear,
of course.
Oh, my God,
we were watching Chernobyl.
Yeah,
HBO. That is a scary show. Because I was around when this happened. In fact, I was here at USB when the news broke. And... it just, wow, I did not even imagine it was as bad as it's being documented. We're talking about radiation levels that initially were thought to be something like 3, which is the maximum on their equipment, turned out to be 15,000. Talking about the entire continent being made unlivable, just horrible things like that. It's a scary show.
Yeah, and I keep thinking there's this project and they're trying to get this technology approved in Washington to recycle nuclear waste in mini reactors, but they can't get approval in Washington to do the testing and build these reactors to recycle nuclear waste. And I kept thinking, watching Chernobyl, wouldn't, you know, this kind of like greenwashing, this like, oh, we'll recycle waste, doesn't that just inspire a more permissive atmosphere for nuclear waste? I mean, there is so much wrong with that technology and how much money goes into the metallurgy and the industrial, it's just so expensive to make that work. And the risk involved to human life and all life is just way too high to substantiate it.
And we don't have any time to talk about it, unfortunately. And we're sorry nobody called, so we can't take your phone. Oh, I'm not sorry. Who am I apologizing to? Maybe next week we'll open up the phones for the entire hour. But you can write to us, as Kyle said, to otw@2600.com. And again, as long as I'm apologizing, I apologize for this track I'm about to play because I realized what they did was basically play it twice and make the song twice as long. It's a really, really cheap trick that they pulled there. And I just found out about that. So when you hear the thing go back, they're just trying to make the song twice as long. You know, we got to be more careful when we pick these things out. I'm sorry.
Lyrical.
Yeah, it's
raw.
Interesting.
Dead MC on the floor.
We'll see you next week.
Who's that standing above him? He's got a microphone and it's pointed in this direction.
I think it might be MC Grinder.
Who?
MC Grinder.
Bang.
bang, lyrical blood to the jaw, bang, lyrical blood to the jaw, bang, lyrical blood to the jaw,
and every MC down on the floor,
bang, lyrical blood to the jaw, bang, lyrical blood to the jaw, bang, lyrical blood to the jaw,
and every MC down on the floor.
999, it's an emergency. Mason Grinder killed an MC. Someone take him to A&E and perform some lyrical surgery.
999, it's an emergency. Mason Grinder killed an MC. Someone take him to A&E and perform some lyrical surgery.
I'm kicking man like Van Damme, who's in the mic with a rough slang. Flying kicks, I look for Jet Li and a triple backflip off a jet screen.
Master the technique of Ninja Sir. Lyrical karate makes me kung fu.
What you gonna say now? What you gonna do when Mason Grinder are coming for you?
Bandage knuckles, I dipped him in glass. Licking every MC up on the ass.
Lyrical dragon punch, so that boss.
Leave your head spinning from one of my bars.
Beast and grinder up on the track. Guess you could call that double impact.
Why are we so lyrically big? Between training, punching a tree for a week.
MC Grinder.
Bang, lyrical blood to the jaw. Bang, lyrical blood to the jaw. Bang, lyrical blood to the jaw.
Leaving every MC down on the floor.
Bang, lyrical blood to the jaw. Bang, lyrical blood to the jaw. Bang, lyrical blood to the jaw.
Leaving every MC down on the floor.
Killed an MC. Someone take him to A&E and perform some lyrical surgery.
Call 999, it's an emergency.
Mason Grinder killed an MC. Someone take him to A&E and perform some lyrical surgery.
I'm kicking man like Van Damme, who's in the mic with a rough slang.
Flying kicks, I look for Jet Li and a triple backflip off a jet screen.
Master the technique of Ninja Sir. Lyrical karate makes me kung fu.
What you gonna say now? What you gonna do when Mason Grinder are coming for you?
Bandage knuckles, I dipped him in glass. Licking every MC up on the ass.
Lyrical dragon punch,
so that boss. Leave your head spinning from one of my bars.
Beast and grinder up on the track. Guess you could call that double impact.
Why are we so lyrically big? Between training,
punching a tree for a week.